Hebrews chapter 12. I'm reading from the New American Standard Translation in case it's a little different than what you have. Should I lower this a little bit? Is this okay? Because I tend to look down. Yeah, maybe that's good. Okay. Hebrews chapter 12, verse 1. Therefore, since we have so great a cloud of witnesses surrounding us, let us also lay aside every encumbrance and the sin which so easily entangles us. And let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. For consider him who has endured such hostility by sinners against himself, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. We're in a race. It's an eternal race. A few years ago, my kids, I took some Christmas money I had, and I bought one of these watches. It's the first generation of the iWatch. And it helps me count my steps. I had a doctor recommend that I better get to doing a bit more exercise, so I chose to do walking. I'm not a runner. I know this talks about being in a race and running, but I'm more of a walker. And in fact, I got up to 15,000 steps a day, and I was pretty happy with myself. I mean, just very excited. This watch is amazing, by the way. It'll even tell me when to breathe. Go figure that, huh? But you get this picture here in Hebrews of like this massive stadium. What stadium did we go by? Miller Park. Went by that big stadium, and I was thinking of this. You know, I don't know if you've ever been out in the middle of a field, like one of the players on the field, and there's thousands of people around. I've never had that privilege. I've never been in a stadium like that to do that. But I get this picture, like this great cloud of witnesses. He tells us in chapter 11 of Hebrews, these are ones like Abel and Enoch and Noah and Abraham and Sarah and Isaac and Jacob and Joseph and Moses and Rahab and Gideon and Barak and Samson and Jephthah and David and Samuel and the prophets. And these all confessed that they were strangers and exiles desiring a better country. We're kind of living at a time like that, aren't we? Even in the natural, in our own nation, you know, people are at borders because they are desiring a better country. We as Christians look forward to a better country. And many of us, I know, have had ones who have gone on before us, and I often wonder if they're in the stadium somewhere, cheering us on as we're in this race. It's an eternal race. It's a race that is not a competition to capture attention. It's not a fundraising marathon or a photo op. It's a race to capture the hearts in order to change eternal destinies. And we're in this race together. 1 Corinthians 9:24 says, to run in such a way that we may win. Crossing the finish line, I believe, is the win. How are we to run this eternal race? I love the story of Clifford Young, 1983, age 61, an ultra marathon between Melbourne and Sydney, Australia. It was a seven-day marathon. As the numbers lined up at the starting line, there was a man by the name of Clifford Young. He was a potato farmer, and he stood in the in the line with his overalls and his gumboots on. People were scratching their heads, you know, because most people had these fancy, you know, running stuff, and you know, they were more fit for the race. Cliff, it was his first marathon, and he was just excited to be in it. So the gun goes off, and they start running, and Cliff decides, you know, he's going to be right in there. But it wasn't long before he was at the very back of the pack. But he was faithful. People were waving, but some people were shouting from the sidelines, "Get that old man out of the race!" But old Cliff just smiled, and he just kept going. And what the plan was, every night at a certain time, the race would cease for a few hours so people could get rest, they could eat, they could, get some strength, put some Band-Aids on blisters and stuff like that. And so that's what the racers had done. Cliff was way behind. And so by the time he crossed that area where people were being taken to their tents to sleep for the night, old Cliff said, "No thanks." And he just kept going. And the next morning, after breakfast, the gun goes off, and the runners begin to take off. And it wasn't long, very long, before they passed old Cliff again. And they were in amazement. This guy had continued on. And he was just taking his, you know, step faithfully. But he was enjoying being in the race. That night, the same thing. Old Cliff, as he passed by, he said, "No thanks." And he just kept going. He just didn't stop. Third night, the same thing. Cliff just kept going. It took a little bit longer for the team to pass him the next day. And the days that followed, but old Cliff, you know, he just kept going. The sixth night came, and the morning of the seventh day, the race, the runners were lined up, they took off again, and as they were running with everything within them, the one thing they noticed was they didn't pass old Cliff on the seventh day. And, you know, some began to think, like, "Wow, I guess poor guy, you know, he must have collapsed somewhere." Anyway, they round a corner or whatever, and they see the finish line. I don't know if you've ever been in a race, but there's just something that goes in you. Some sort of adrenaline just starts to happen, and you just can't find more strength and energy to burst. And that's what they did, and they're running, and they're running, and they're running, and they're heading toward the finish line. And all of a sudden, they saw a familiar face at the finish line. Old Cliff was there, waving at him, encouraging him on. Cliff had arrived at the finish line 9 hours ahead of the fastest of the runners. We are in a race. What is that thing that says we're in it to win it? But I believe with all my heart the win is to finish the race. Cliff never won another marathon because people figured out his strategy. They asked him, "How did you do this?" He said, "When I was a little kid." He said, "My dad owned this vast farm, but we didn't own a tractor. We didn't own a pickup. And so when the cattle would get out and wander away, my dad would send me out. And I would sometimes be 3 nights and days trying to bring back the cattle and round them up. And I learned how to run." We're in it for the glory of God. But there's some things we must run without if we're to run this eternal race. We're needing to run without anything that would hinder us. It's like Galatians 5 says, "You were running so well, but who hindered you from obeying the truth?" Every weight, every encumbrance, he says, needs to be tossed aside. Encumbrances can be like worry. Worry can weigh us down almost more than anything. When we first arrived in Zimbabwe, Africa. I'm this young missionary, got a family I'm trying to take care of. And it was a wartime. The tribes that had helped to fight for their independence from the white colonialists were now, after succeeding in doing that, they were now fighting each other. And it was a vicious time. There were many that were whose lives were taken during that time, many who disappeared. And it was a difficult time. And right about that same time, there was a depression that came over me. I'm just confessing today. I was deeply worried about my family. We couldn't take journeys outside of town. AK-47s would be pointed through the window at roadblocks, and there were many of them that we'd have to go through. And I found myself worrying, and I found myself trying to pray through in the midst of all that. Worry is something that can keep us from running well. I thank God for victory. I thank Him for bringing me through that. But it was a very difficult time. We need to also run without unforgiveness. Is there anybody that comes to mind when I say that word? Somebody that's really hard to forgive? One of our pastors at that time that I was going through that heavy time of worry, Pastor Inyati had started many churches in Zimbabwe, but now the ruling tribe was putting pressure on his tribe. And he was just founding churches. He was just a faithful mentor of young men going into ministry. But they came into his village, and they beat him. They beat him with the rifle butts so much that he fell into unconsciousness. Then they realized what they had done. It was the soldiers who had done it. And they weren't wanting him to go to town because they were afraid the news media would get a hold of it. So they had to sneak him through the night, and it took several nights. And they finally got Brother Inyati to town. He was in the hospital. He was in and out of consciousness. His head, open wounds. One morning he came to, and he asked for Alvin. Alvin was the local gas station attendant who was also a young pastor he was mentoring. And he started calling for Alvin. And so a runner went down the hill to where his petrol station said, "Alvin, you need to come now. Pastor Inyati is calling for you." And so he took off, and he ran up the hill with the runner, and he got to Brother Inyati's bedside. Brother Inyati could hardly speak, but he looked up at Alvin and he said, "Alvin, would you do something for me?" He said, "Brother Inyati, I'll do anything for you." He said, "Will you please tell the men who beat me that I forgive them?" You see, we can't hope to go on and finish this race, however noble, however worthy the race is and the prize at the end. We can't hope to do it if we have the weight of unforgiveness on us. He also says we're to run without sin, sin that so easily entangles us. Nothing will entangle us faster than willful sin. We can't run this race. We can't run this race and have willful sin going on. We can't run it with weariness, he says in verse 3. Paul the apostle said in Galatians 6:9, "In due time we'll reap if we do not grow weary." In Isaiah 40:29, he gives strength to the weary. Jeremiah 12, verse 5, says, "If you've run with the footmen and they have tired you out, how will you compete with the horses? If you fall down in the land of peace, how will you do in the thicket of the Jordan?" So things to run without. There are also some things we need to run with. He says in verse 1 of Hebrews 12, we're to run with endurance or perseverance. This requires proper conditioning. I've got a son who loves to run races. And he's done the marathon, but in the two continents, where it's in Turkey, where he was an intern, just off of there, and he was running across the bridge from in Istanbul. The bridge crosses a river, and the rest of the city is on the other continent and on the other side. My son loves to run, but I've talked to him about his running, and he says, "Sure, absolutely. There's some things that you can't run." He chooses to run with these kind of shoes that are actually look like socks with long, and then that has the pads on the bottom. He chooses to run like that, and that's his way of running a race. But there's things that we need to run with, of course, endurance. He also says in verse 2, we need to run with joy. Gladness, he says in Isaiah 9:3, in our hearts is like the gladness. There's no gladness like it than the gladness of harvest. Oh, the joy of knowing we're in an eternal race. We're doing our best to bring others to Jesus. Acts 20:24, in the King James, it says, that I might finish my race with joy. Hallelujah. We need to not only run with perseverance and run with joy, but we need to run with others. I'm preaching to the church tonight, but we're not to avoid assembling ourselves together, he says in Hebrews 10:25. Our son Todd, who is the racer, one of the things he decided after the kids were born, that he wanted to enter a marathon in Southern California, pushing a stroller with the two sons in the stroller. And those little guys learned about running, and Todd actually, when he crossed the finish line with these boys in the stroller, they congratulated, the race organizers in Long Beach Marathon congratulated him because he had come in first, but he had also broken the Guinness World Record for those running a marathon with a stroller. That world record only lasted a few hours, though, because somebody in Germany had a faster stroller, I guess. And so, anyway, there was no medals for that. But he loves to run. Things we need to run without, things we need to run with, and things we need to run toward. He says we need to run this race looking unto Jesus, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, despised the shame. We need to be focused on Jesus as we run this race, and other things begin to fall off when we're focused on him. Last furlough, we were here. We were here at Oak Creek. But during that furlough, we were in Southern California. And we were going out to eat with our son Todd and his family, and little Jack was getting restless. We were going to one of those Mediterranean kind of restaurants. It wasn't the Mad Rooster, but it was pretty close. But there was a line of people waiting to get in to this little restaurant. So I said to Jack, come on, let's go for a walk. And so I took his hand, and we started walking along the strip mall, and we're talking about all kinds. He's asking me questions, and we're walking along, and I had said to his mom, Ashley, I said, now give me a call when they call our name, and we can go in, and then I'll bring Jack back. And so the phone rang. I pick it up. I get it to my ear, and Jack figures out that it's his mom saying that the table is ready. I barely get the phone put away, and Jack is, pew, I mean, he is down, running. In fact, as I got closer to, I'm old, and as I got a little bit closer, I could hear this. I could hear him yelling out, "On your right, on your right!" And people would go like this, and here's this looking for somebody big, and there's this little guy, pew, running past, and he'd get to the next group of family or whatever, and he'd go, "On your left, on your left!" And he'd, pew, he was focused on getting to mommy and that food. Run focused on Jesus. We need to run toward him. Something they tell us in our training In these hours of mission work, it's not like it was in the earlier days of missions. Today we have to deal with the realities of terrorism and being prepared as best we can. The mission puts us through strategies and these role-playing type of seminars, and even those can be mighty scary. But one of the things they tell us, and I think of David and facing Goliath. You know, Saul wanted to put armor on him and said, "You're going to need this to go out and face that enemy." And he said, I can't do that. But what did he do when he heard Goliath mocking God, cursing the king and the children of Israel? What did David do? We read in 1 Samuel 17:48, it says that David ran toward Goliath. That's what they teach us in this security training. If you're finally, if you're at the end of it, and that you've tried to hide, you've tried to protect, you've tried to do, the final last straw you can do is to run towards your enemy and zigzag as you do it. And as they're distracted, others can flee outdoors or find a way of escape. You may not make it, but there comes a time when we are in this. You know, how many times as parents have we been on our face with tears and we've been crying out for our kids, and we're just saying, I just can't take this anymore. I'm tired of the enemy butchering and destroying my family. How many times have we said, and finally God just put it in our heart, and we just run toward the enemy to defeat him. Things to run toward for the glory of God. Not only toward Jesus, looking unto him, not only toward the enemy, but we also need to run toward the lost. I know we do a lot of events in our churches, and these are awesome opportunities. I loved hearing the story from Pastor Brooks this morning about the trunk or treat, I guess it was, out here, and the many people that came to Jesus who came on the property. Those are awesome times. I love that kind of stuff. It's so real, and people will come that don't normally come. But there's also a time when we need to run toward the lost and reach them right where they are. Taking the message of the gospel, I know you do that. I love this story in Luke 15 of the prodigal son who, in a way, was lost. He had said to his dad, "Give me my inheritance." And he went off and squandered it. And he finally ended up in the pig pen. I don't know if any of you, do they raise pigs in Wisconsin? I don't know. The first time, I'm a city boy. You know, I don't know much about farming and vegetable gardening and all that kind of stuff. First time I ever was on a pig farm was in Africa. And mercy, it kind of took away the desire for bacon for a while, when I smelled it. It's just not fun, but here this son is now in the pig pens, feeding the pigs, desiring to eat what they eat. And then it says that he came to his senses, verse 17 of chapter 15 of Luke. And he said, "My father has more than enough food, his servants. I'll go back and serve my dad." And so he starts coming, but you get this picture. I love this. It's a picture of the father. As the son is heading back, the father apparently every day, he would look out to the edge of the property, out the gate, down the road, to see if his son was coming home. And one day, for sure, it came. He saw his son dragging himself back home. But what did the father do when the son was still far off? It says in verse 20. And while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and felt compassion for him, and he ran toward him and embraced him. The son had been crying out for the world, but the father was crying out for the son. May we have that kind of heart to run after the lost. Our heart's desire in going back to Africa, in fact, I was reflecting tonight, I went with Pastor Steve over to the youth chapel. I remember preaching in that chapel, you know, a lot of years ago on one furlough. I remember that down that hallway, there was an open door that went to the old building. I told Pastor Steve, I said, we've got something in common. Not only the same name, but I was also a youth pastor for 2 months here at Oak Creek Assembly between Bible school years. And where they housed me, where I slept each night, was in the nursery in that old building. We've come a long way since then. That's one reason why Oak Creek is so dear to us. We were walking the streets of Pretoria, a city of 4 million plus people in South Africa. This past Christmas was a bit of a lonely Christmas. The other missionaries had taken off. We poured ourselves into nationals. We went to local churches. We had people over. We were spending Christmas that way. And the other thing we did was we did our prayer walks. When I do these 15,000 steps a day, I use it as a prayer time. And I'm walking neighborhoods, I'm praying for neighbors. We've had robberies in our area. We've even had a murder in our area at one particular point. And so I find myself, as I walk the streets, I found myself, you know, just praying for neighbors, using it as a prayer time. Glenda and I walk together a lot of the time. We were walking and asked the Lord, you know, like I said in the video, you know, the gray hair, we're toward the end. We're not finished yet. We've asked the mission for one more lap, one more time around. We thank God for what He's allowed us the privilege of being involved in all these years. But Jesus tells us in Matthew that we're to pray the Lord of the harvest send more laborers. There might be some on the sidelines watching us, still in the race, probably wondering, man, get that old man out of the race. No. But our cry as we are visiting America this year of furlough and we're traveling, getting opportunities to share. We haven't come to Oak Creek to recruit you. That won't do any good when you're in the thick of it. When the enemy's attacking you in a foreign land, you've got to know that God has called you. But our cry is that somebody. I preached at Evangel Bible College a few years ago. I walked onto the platform with a shovel. Said, we're digging wells in Africa. The students look at me like, oh my goodness. And I said, I'm wondering who I can hand this shovel to. Take up the shovel. Head to villages. Like, we won't do it like we've done it. I know that. But if God's talking to your heart tonight, first of all, if you're in the race and you're one of those who've been trying to run it, extra baggage, maybe lost focus on the finish line, invite you to come to this altar. Might be some of you that would say, you know, I feel God's doing something in my heart. Young people in this room, you've got dreams, I know. You've got dreams. You know, Acts says old men dream dreams. You're supposed to have visions. We want God to talk to you. The way he's going to do that is right here. Right here. So I just want to invite you to do what this young man has just done. I invite you to come from where you are and say, Lord, here am I. I don't know how you normally close it, Pastor Tom, but I just want to open this up. Give you a chance to just call out to him. There's a song. I don't know if you can pick it up. It's a song that we sing in Africa. I always thought we sang it here. But it's a song that says this: there's a race that I must run. There are victories to be won. Give me power every hour to be true. We're in this race to win it for you. If you've got a young person up here, maybe it's not one of your own even, but you can come and lay a hand. Come and join them, will you? Just come and pray together.
Oh, we praise you.